Subway famous $5 footlongs. So many sublicious choices, like the Delicioso Spicy Italian. And when you enjoy any regular footlong, order one of the many Subway dollar footlong sidekicks, like 21-ounce drinks and tasty sides, just $1 each or less. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. All right, as promised, Fast and Furious is on pace to make like $1 billion in the theaters, and the two people that love that movie more than really anyone else on the planet, as well as the two people that live their life a quarter of a mile at a time, myself, Mr. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, good.
Welcome to the
here.
BS Report, my man.
Excited to be back.
How is your podcasting career going?
It's going very well. Interviewed Mike Tyson last night.
Nice.
Who, boy, got to tell you a little about him. And
please do.
Alec Baldwin called me out of the blue the other day and said, I want to do the podcast.
Let's do this.
I'm in town. Let's do it. And number one in the comedy department, at least on iTunes, top five on the iTunes over there in general. And
God forbid they told us how they figured out those rankings and stats.
I have no idea, but we got hundreds of thousands of listeners, and God bless you all. It's been fun. I like it. I mean, for me, I like the wide open format, you know, the no cue cards, the swearing my ass off and all that good stuff. And I think, like, we haven't done Baldwin yet, but Baldwin is a guy he's filthy and he likes to kind of go long form, and seeing him on a talk show is good because he's clever and he's funny and he's fast, and 7 minutes with David Letterman's good, but an hour with me where he drops a few C-bombs is going to be awesome. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, the first time I went on, you dropped a couple F-bombs, and then I kind of dip my toe in the water with one, and
yeah.
It felt great.
Yeah.
It was like,
liberating.
This is a really dated movie reference, but in Boy in the Plastic Bubble, and John Travolta's TV movie.
That's not dated. That's like
1976. It's going to be dated for anyone under 30. But he finally, he's in the bubble because he's got this weird immune system. He can't handle air or something. And
yeah.
At the end, they finally let him out of the bubble, and he doesn't care if he's risking his life. He's just walking around looking at the trees.
You felt like when you dropped your first F-bomb?
And my 10th.
You know, in every one of those good movies, there's a love interest.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, they touch hands.
Yeah.
Through the sheet of Visqueen that blocks off his bedroom, and
yeah.
Then they'll kiss through it, too.
Right.
And I just thought, first off, I remember watching that show when I was like 12 or 13 thinking, this guy is trapped in a habit trail and he's getting more ass than me. I'm out breathing fresh air, germ free. I'm in the seventh grade and I can't get a phone number. This guy in the plastic bubble is getting more tail than I am.
I was hoping that it was released on DVD, and I was hoping for a deleted scene that was like the scene in Midnight Express when Billy Davis sees his girlfriend for the first time, the masturbation through the glass scene. It's like, oh my God, John Travolta, put that thing away.
I think, by the way, I'm pretty sure John Travolta dated the mom.
Yes.
And then she died of breast cancer or something?
They were engaged and she died of cancer. You know, I got to say, it was a little fishy when they link the guy, the actor whose sexuality is being questioned at the time, suddenly has a torrid romance with a 40-year-old woman who's dying with cancer.
Don't believe it?
It was a little fishy to me. Even when I was 7, I was a little suspicious.
<I'm sure. laughs> Bill Simmons in the second grade was a little skeptical.
Yeah, I had my Coke bottle glasses, and I'm thinking, wait a second. This guy's dating, she's 40, and she's got cancer? This is...
I know. Yeah. It's always so sad, too, when you get into those conversations with your wife, and I don't recommend these, but, like, where you get into these, if I were that dude, hey, man, if I was that good-looking, and I was 21, and I was the toast of the town, I wouldn't be nailing some old bag. I'd be out having – and meanwhile, the old bag is the same age your wife currently is. Yeah. It's never a good plan.
No.
Just keep those feelings to yourself or maybe just between us.
I have my wife's been getting very mad at me lately because I have this theory that on any reality show where they have to vote people off, whether it's Survivor, Real World Road Rules Challenge, basically whoever has the biggest breasts is going in the first three episodes. The other women just team up on her every time. You see the big cans? She's going home in 3 weeks. They team up on her. The other woman just, they resent her so much for the breast that they team up on her and they get her out.
In a way, it's probably a good thing because in Survivor, you could mark the time by the cup size the cans drop as they become more emaciated. Week number one, double D.
Yeah.
2 weeks in, C cup. Now we're down to a B cup. It'd be heartbreaking to see him wither away. It'd be like what happened to Ricky Bell.
Yeah.
Or, well, he was the guy that.
Well, it's like, you know, I would, to use an actress analogy, it's like Jennifer Connelly, who was about as stacked naturally in a blessed way as anyone we've seen.
And beautiful. And then they all worry about being all skinny and striated and they all try to look like Madonna. And, you know,
Aniston did it too.
And chicks get jealous of other chicks' arms. Have you seen Madonna's arms? She has veins going. That's like, okay. She looks, I don't want a chick that looks like Marvin Hagler in his heyday.
Yeah.
I don't even care about the arms. I just want
a little meat.
Whatever. I'm focused at the boobies. I got arms. I don't have boobies. I don't need something I got.
You know, the person I blame for that is Linda Hamilton in Terminator.
Yeah, she decided to get the guns going.
She got the guns for Terminator 2. It was a big deal. All those stories were like, oh, phenomenal shape. Whoa.
Look at those guns.
5% body fat. She's ripped. And then Madonna did it, and then it became this accepted thing. You had to be a hot actress with great arms.
Yeah, and then they started looking. If you go back and look at any of the old Iron Maiden record covers with the weird Skeletor sort of if you guys Google Iron Maiden record cover, you'll laugh your ass off because it's like it's the Crypt Keeper. It's like that weird, crazy. The eyes get bigger.
Yeah.
Everything gets sunken in, and the veins get big. But meanwhile, here's what I don't want: bigger arms, smaller boobs. I like to go the other direction. I like smaller arms, bigger boobs. Yeah. That's what you ladies need to focus on.
Well, I'll tell you know, did you watch Eastbound and Down, the HBO show?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Oh, it's in your wheelhouse. It's
it
raunchy. Yeah, I really like it.
I know it's filthy, but is there nudity?
There's nudity.
Oh,
well,
really?
There's this girl, the love interest of it, who's a throwback, like a little beefy.
Yeah.
Very buxom.
Mm-hmm.
And basically from episode one, you're just waiting for the nude scene.
Right.
So they did six episodes, six scene. They finally come off, but they did the close-up.
Really?
And it was unclear if it was the body double or not.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned this in a mailbag saying, you know, it set her up six episodes. She finally...
Mm-hmm.
And then I got just a frightening batch of emails from readers who had analyzed this like the Zapruder film and pointed out that it was definitely a body double because the original actress had freckles on her chest.
Right.
And this one didn't. One of them had a mole. The other one didn't. The bra was different.
They wouldn't go close up if it wasn't a body double.
Yeah. Well, it was one of the most controversial nude scenes ever. But back to my point, this was a throwback old school 70s little meat on her girl. And people are, pausing her nude scene to make sure it's her. So
right. It
seems like the actresses should go in the other direction. Maybe put more meat on themselves instead of the cigarette, nicotine, personal trainer thing.
I'm with you. Like, I like the old Lindsay Lohan that had some cleavage on her.
What a tragedy.
And not the emaciated one. And
who now looks like her mom. You notice?
Yeah.
Like, she's got the long horse mom face now.
Yeah.
What happened to a little chubby, cute Lindsay Lohan?
I don't know. Ladies, if you're listening, you know, have yourself another Puddin' Pop and stop worrying about it and knock off the Pilates and also knock off all the core stuff. I don't like the core stuff. It's really a sign of the times. Like, back in the 80s, when you guys were doing your aerobics class, like in that perfect movie with the aforementioned John Travolta.
Yes.
Nothing better. Nothing better than the outfit that the aerobics that you guys wore in the 80s and then the movement. You put yourself in a little unitard, especially a little thong back with some leggings, and then you just jump up and down to let's get physical for 45 minutes. Nothing better.
Good
now,
era.
You guys are rolling. First off, you're wearing weird Pilates pants, and you're rolling around on a ball with some gay guy instructing you. This is horrible. This is a horrible step backwards. And you think about it, just symbolically, everyone is working on their core, which is like, I'm worried about me and my core. Everyone is now turned to them in like, it's like everyone drives their car with their windows up, talking on the phone. Everyone's on themselves now. And it used to be, you'd go to the gym and you'd go, I'm going to work arms, and you'd spread out, like arms over there, calves over there, traps, delts over there, spread it out. Now, it's all about me. It's all about my core.
I would
working
also blame
core.
I'd blame the changes in milk.
Mm.
When we were growing up, whole milk. You drank whole milk. You didn't know any better. Then it went to 2%. Now you get soy milk.
Ah.
And for women, I think, you know, no woman drinks even 2% milk anymore. They're either 1% or soy milk.
Well,
you kind of need that for your body.
It's not only the change in milk, it's that they won't touch it anymore.
They want to have ice cream. They want to have milkshakes.
And it's so every nutritionist on the planet, the first story they give you, there's two things they tell you. First is you got to drink water. You got to hydrate, man.
Yeah.
You should be drinking 8 to 10 12-ounce glasses of water a day. Well, let me just do some quick math for everyone who's listening. When I was growing up, there was no water anywhere. Nobody drove in their car with water.
Yeah.
You didn't see a guy driving. Well, they didn't have water bottles. But when you were a kid, did you ever see someone in the car next to you drinking off a canteen?
No.
Or Boda bag?
No.
You didn't go to a meeting. Our dads didn't go to business meetings, have people hand them a water. There was that one weird gold plastic water thing in the middle of the boardroom table. Nobody touched it. They drank booze back then. They didn't hydrate. They drank scotch at these meetings.
Yeah.
And they were skinny.
Yeah.
That's my point. So we drink 5,000% more water than we used to drink.
Well, they were smoking back then, so that might have been the extra 10 pounds.
But even the kids. I mean, I would go
out,
ride my bike, play all day in the San Fernando Valley in the middle of the noonday heat, and at some point I'd get a suck off a hose for two gulps, and it's right back on. I didn't drink any water. Nobody drank any water. Now everyone drinks 10 times as much water as they used to drink, and everyone is 10 times fatter than they used to be. So how is water the key to health when we drink billions of gallons of it and we've all put on 25 pounds?
But you just told the answer.
Cigarettes and booze?
Well, cigarettes and booze. But also, when you were a kid and when I was a kid, I remember like in Brookline we had this dump.
Mm-hmm.
There was a dump like probably a 2-mile walk from my house. We would walk over to this dump and like look for like Playboys or Sports Illustrateds and run around and throw stuff.
Ditch.
We'd play for, I mean, it was like a four-mile round-trip walk. We'd play. We're getting exercise. Now we just would be in front of a PlayStation playing Grand Theft Auto 7.
And
that's the difference.
And by the way, is that your gardener calling? It's going to be late because I've never done one of these podcasts that doesn't have your gardener coming over.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We got rid of him for today.
Oh. Now, back to the women. So the other thing that the nutritionist will always tell you besides drink tons of water, knock off the dairy. You don't need milk.
Yeah.
And then they do this thing.
Really? You don't need milk?
They do that thing where they go, you know, we're the only mammals that drink other mammals' milk. And you know, they did that stuff. It's like when the gays go, you know, in the wild, there are a lot of homosexual animals. Like there's a lot of monkeys that pair up with our. Yeah, okay. I get it. It's cool. But I'm drinking my milk. We don't need to do some weird nature discussion. We're the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
We'll make the rules.
It's gone too far.
Yeah, if we want to look, there's not other animals that have cell phones, eat sushi, or have nannies. We do.
I like the people that are vegetarians who won't eat meat. I'm not going to eat anything that lives, but they'll eat fish.
I know. And if you think,
what does that mean?
If you think about it too, like, a chicken is a cockroach compared to a swordfish. Like, if you ever see the majesty of a big marlin or swordfish or even a Chilean sea bass or whatever just swimming in the open ocean, Mm. And by the way, those things are like 50 years old, too, versus the chicken that's like 10 minutes old and living in its own crap.
Right.
So I'm saying, if you're going to just do a line like, all right, I'm not going to eat a dolphin. I'm not going to eat a monkey. Like, I'm not going to eat things that are evolved. Cow and chicken are
and
at the
pig.
Bottom of the food, and pig are at
yeah.
the bottom of the food chain, whereas the swordfish is at the top.
I got to ask
the
you,
middle.
In my mailbag, I had a thing about a reader asked me, when did I lose my breast virginity?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, what movie did I see my first pair of breasts?
Mm-hmm.
And I said that it was in Slapshot, Paul Newman hooked up with Hanrahan's ex-wife, and yeah. they're just sitting there for like 4 minutes. But then I was flicking channels the other day, and The Deep was on with Jacqueline Bisset.
Yeah, yeah. That's
first 7 minutes, she's scuba diving in a white
t-shirt. Yeah, that's a pop my cherry on her, too.
I saw that in a movie theater in 1977. I think that was before Slapshot. And, I mean, I remember the movie theater. I remember the time of the movie. I was with my mom. That was awkward.
Yeah.
There ever been a greater scene has there ever been a greater decision than the director saying, yeah, instead of a bathing suit, what about a white t-shirt, Jacqueline?
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if she even knew what was going on, but it was
no.
the hottest ever.
Iconic.
And it must have been exciting for Robert Shaw, who just came off the set of Jaws.
Yeah.
Here's a totally different role for you. You're a salty man of the sea who eats you eat saltines and you're an a-hole.
It's a good movie.
I think Shaw could cover that role.
There should be a scuba diving movie released like every 3 years. Actually,
Into
the Blue should have been good. But if Jessica had been in the white t-shirt.
Yes.
That goes from like a $50 million movie to it makes $300 million.
Yeah,
I'm convinced.
And plus, Khan's kid, whatever.
Scotty Khan?
Scotty Khan's girlfriend does a little topless sunbathing on the,
yeah.
on the ship, but she's an A-cup. Come
yeah.
on, folks. Producers,
yeah.
what's
yeah.
going on?
This is why we should be the consultants for all topless scenes and all sports movie scenes in movies like the Nick Cage movie where he jumps the goalpost.
I'm just saying, if you're an A-cup, don't even bother taking the top off. We can do the math. I mean, look, if there was a 13-year-old skinny teenage boy and he was wearing a bikini top,
yeah.
would you really be like, hey, man, let me see what's under there? I know what's under there. Couple of nipples and nothing. I don't need to see nothing. I want to see something.
We don't have a ton of time because you're still casting your CBS pilot, which
yeah.
is getting a lot of buzz.
It is?
Hey, I'm throwing it out there.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it is. You should have agreed and said,
yeah. Hell yeah. It's hot.
Yeah, a lot of people talking about it.
You're
still looking for a wife.
Yeah.
I suggest that Tiffany Amber Thiessen. I think she needs a comeback.
I will bring her up today because I saw Carney Wilson, 9 months pregnant yesterday.
Auditioning for your show?
As my wife.
Well, I mean, you've brought in probably 90% of the actors between 35 and 45 in the country.
I saw Ricky Lake and Carney Wilson yesterday.
Was it stomach stapling day?
Ricky Lake talked to us about natural birthing for an hour.
Okay.
And then Carney Wilson, ironically, came in as big as a house, ready to pop. I mean, she looked like a Macy Day parade balloon, ready just to pop. And she just walked in and she said, well, I can work for another 2 weeks, but then I gotta pop. And I said, oh, great. We're starting in 2.5 weeks.
Thanks for coming.
It's an awesome process.
Well, there's one actress. We won't mention her name. You actually had an actress that had a complete nervous and mental breakdown.
Yes.
During the casting process that was really one of the defining moments of your career so far, just to be involved with this.
First off, they're all 40-year-old women, and they're all the women that 20 years ago were the hot ingenues that we remember seeing on all those shows we were watching.
Tell your theory. This is one of my top 7 favorite Corolla theories about when you're a kid, mm-hmm. like, for instance, you and I growing up, love Farrah Fawcett.
Well, Cheryl Ladd.
Well, but I'm saying,
me, but yeah.
All right, Cheryl Ladd. We love Cheryl Ladd.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love Cheryl Ladd. I actually like Cheryl more than Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
We've talked about this endlessly
yeah.
for hours and hours.
Right. Right.
But there comes a point in, say, Adam Carolla's career, you become visible, you're on TV, you're doing radio,
mm-hmm.
you're in your late 30s, Cheryl Ladd now, early 50s.
Right.
Maybe divorced.
Right.
You're at a Hollywood party together.
Right.
somehow her career is, or her stock has dropped, but yours has risen, and you reach this point where the two points meet.
Right.
And you could actually take her home and have sex with her.
Yeah. And then there's a point where you'd be doing her a favor if you took her home and nailed her, which is comical too.
Right.
Yeah. It's like when I was 21 and Cheryl Ladd was 34 and I was swinging a hammer in the valley, if I pulled up in my crappy pickup truck, said, "Hey, baby, you ready to get it on?"
1,000,000 to 1 odds.
Higher than that, and it would have, there's not enough roofies in Mexico to get, to get that job accomplished.
Right.
But now there's the point where it's like an X and you cross. She's kind of moving down one side and you're moving up
yep.
the other side. And where you cross, you're going to be at Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Yeah.
You're going to be there in like 9 months.
Yeah.
9 months, 9 to 16 months, you guys are going to cross. I mean, the podcast is going gangbusters.
Yeah.
She might not be in your demo, but she's probably dated a few guys. Let's see. She's freshly divorced and her husband was a huge Bill Simmons fan. So she had to hear all about you.
A little revenge.
She's getting a little bit long in the tooth. Maybe she's had a kid and hasn't fully bounced back, got a little bit of a gut or a stretch mark on her. You're right there.
Mm.
I mean, you're...
Would I have to dress like Brandon Walsh or Mark Pearl Gosselaar to really complete
Gosselaar.
How creepy it would be?
Gosselaar. Come on.
Gosselaar. All right, wait. We have like 15, 10 minutes or something.
Really? What the hell happened to the time?
Well, you have to leave. You have to go cast your show.
I know.
You'll end up staying 5 minutes long. Mm. Fast and Furious.
That's right.
You and I... Yeah, it's funny. Jimmy... Our friend Jimmy Kimmel can be so condescending.
Such a snob.
Such a snob. And I texted him like, "Hey, Carolla and I are going to Fast and Furious Day. You want to go?" I saw it. It was horrible. Don't waste your time. That was the email I got back.
By the way, like that would slow us down.
Yeah. So I emailed back. You don't understand. Like, we don't care that it's horrible. We love this franchise. We want it to be horrible. And then he did send some pithy email back. You guys have the highest IQ of anybody who've ever seen that movie.
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah,
we were the two smartest guys in the theater that day. Look, it is what it is. I mean,
yeah.
Jordana Brewster is a horrible actress.
No, you're not giving her...
I'm giving her too much credit?
Yeah, horrible is too much credit. She might be... She was making faces that people make after that, what's that, Bell's palsy? That's her
yeah.
only face, is like the Bell's palsy face.
The heads at Easter Island look more natural than her when she's in a scene. That's awesome. Vin Diesel, you know, Diesel seems like he had like a Quaalude and a shot of Vicks before every single scene. Like, say, I'm back. And I'm looking for revenge. And it's great when they do those lines, because every single of those movies, there's and somewhere in the middle, they go, "We got to stop before it's too late." It's already too late. But the person never goes, "No, it's not," which would be my answer.
Yeah.
Like if we were driving to Vegas, like if you and I decided right now, you know what? We're getting divorced and... We're going to just both have a shot of Crown Royal, and we're getting in your Beamer, and we're heading to Vegas, and we're going to start a new life.
Can we do that?
And we did. But we stopped at the Great Greek, and we sobered up a little bit.
Yeah.
And I went, "You know what, man? I got kids at home. I got a CBS pilot. I don't think we should be doing this. I think we should turn back." If you want, "It's too late. It's already begun." I'd go, "No, it's not. We could go back. No one would know." But they never do that part in the movie.
No.
The Vin Diesel just always goes, "It's already too late." And then they go, "All righty, moving on."
Well, we talked about afterwards about how first of all, it's just so funny because everyone in Hollywood is short.
Mm-hmm.
Vin Diesel particularly short, maybe 5'5", 5'6". As you said, he's bald. He looks like Uncle Fester. He's kind of chubby. He looked like Steven Seagal near the end of the Seagal reign, where he actually had a little weight on him.
He sort of looks like the turtle from Warner Brothers cartoon. There was like a turtle and who was racing Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
And he was like, no.
Yeah.
You don't see turtle heads that often.
He's a little neck fat.
It's starting to get the rolls that you get back there.
So he's 5'6", and so the whole plot is... I'm going to give away the plot.
Go ahead.
It's a stupid movie. So his girlfriend.
I saw the movie. I don't know what the plot is, so that's going to be news to me.
His longtime girlfriend is killed by some drug syndicate.
Yeah.
And they say her name and how she was killed, and this is how you know it's a bad movie. Carole and I didn't know what character it was.
Right.
Like, yeah, Lydia's dead. It's like, who's Lydia? Is that Jordana Brewster? Like, we have no idea until the funeral.
These things are always, by the way, based on, he goes in, all right, spoiler alert, Vin Diesel comes back from like Central America where he's been running, hijacking tanker trucks.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he goes to the crash site where his beloved died. And he like does that move where he reaches down.
You forgot. He looked at the tread marks first.
He saw the skid marks. Then he reaches down, smells his finger. He rubs it on the asphalt, smells his finger. And he's like, nitromethane. And here's a shocker. I hope everyone's sitting down. There's only one guy in town who deals nitromethane. Well, let me tell you something, car fans. Every single Top Fuel funny car and rail runs off nitromethane. Every NHRA rail, every dragster, everything that Big Daddy Don Garlett has ever got into, or Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney, every funny car, every race, everything, every weekend when they have the Winter Nationals or whatever, yeah, nitro methane. So there's probably more than one guy.
Well, you also left out the part where he was in Central America for 3 years.
Right.
Comes back. First of all, just the fact that he could just look at tread marks and recreate the accident
in
his head.
Great.
Who
it
could
was
do
awesome.
That? Then touches the nitro methane. There's only one guy in L.A. You haven't been in L.A. in 3 years.
Yeah.
You don't think anybody, there's no newcomer you don't know about?
So he goes and he gets the information out of the guy and he shakes him down.
Yeah,
and
always a fun scene.
They also do that thing, too, which is great, where he shows up back at the old hood. And that's where spinstress Jordana Brewster, who's never loved again.
Well, let's talk about that. So in The Fast and the Furious, the first one.
Yeah.
Paul Walker, turns out he's an FBI agent. He's involved with Jordana Brewster. She's betrayed. They break up. They live in this house, not in a great area. Seems like Echo Park, maybe.
Yeah, it's like South Central. It's those houses that are around USC.
Not a great house.
Right.
So Vin has been in Central America hijacking tankers, and he's basically a pirate, raking in God knows how many money.
Right.
7 years later, same house.
She's
what are they doing with the money?
And by the way, she's still in the 1919 7,000 square foot Craftsman in the middle of South Central, just living alone.
Right.
She's a hot 27-year-old chick just walking home from the market.
Walking home with the groceries.
Bag of groceries.
No job.
And they do that great part too, where he shows up, and they do this in all crappy movies. He shows up, and she goes, "What are you doing here? The feds have been watching this place for years. They know you're back. They're surrounded. They're going to catch you because they've been on stake. They're staking
this
place
out." Well, they showed the car, and they showed the car outside, the stakeout.
They're talking in the garage at night with the door open, just the light coming down the driveway. And she goes, "You can't come back here." And he settles this troublesome plot point by going, "Don't worry about it." And then you just move on. All right, well, we solved that problem. Must be great to write these movies, because somewhere you're in the writer's room and someone's going, "But wouldn't he be caught by the feds? I know how we'll clear this up. Vin Diesel say don't worry about it. All right, we'll just move forward." Cut to 25 scenes of him working in the garage with the door wide open at midnight. Radio on, light coming out. No way you'd ever catch him there.
The feds are like, "We know he's coming back. He's in town. We got to get him." Like, this guy's wanted for 20 crimes.
Right.
In the garage, door open.
At his house.
working on hot rod cars.
Have you people not seen Dog the Bounty Hunter? Do you not know how this works?
So Vin and Paul Walker, who's undercover,
yeah,
enter this. The drug syndicate has decided, we're going to stage a street race to find out who our drivers are going to be.
Listen, and I want to just say this. I'm not a member of a drug cartel, but here's how I'm pretty sure it doesn't work. When you're looking for drivers to run heroin in from Mexico to the United States, you do not stage a huge street party. You keep it on the down low.
A huge street party with the guy who's in charge of the syndicate. there hitting golf balls.
Right. And everyone else is out in the parking lot pumping up the jam. They got a DJ out there. These guys are doing shots of Patron.
They have a cocaine fountain.
They've taken over three city blocks. There's a bunch of prostitutes flown in from Nevada. Like, I don't know about you, but if I was starting a drug cartel and I needed drivers to mule in the heroin, I would quietly go about sorting out these guys rather than having huge block parties. I always want to know where all the smoking hot chicks come from.
Oh, well, then this leads to, so there's this like 5'11 hot chick who works for the drug syndicate.
She's clearly, I mean, she must be a Russian model.
Right.
She's like 6 foot tall.
Beautiful.
100 pounds and piercing blue eyes.
Vin somehow at the party goes into the basement, which just happens to have the car that killed his girlfriend, which he knows because he could tell by the skid marks.
Right.
And by the nitro meth that he found on the ground. So he's admiring the car and she comes in, immediately hits on him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, a 5'6" bald guy with neck fat who doesn't have a job, how can he not be seduced?
That's who he is in the movie, but we all know it's Vin Diesel who's going to save the day. And I'm not sure how these chance encounters work because upstairs the party is raging. Downstairs, the Gran Torino that ran over his old lady is sitting alone in the dark.
Yeah.
Vin steals away from the party and sneaks down there.
Through an elevator.
Through an elevator. What is she doing? Just sitting on a stool until the strange guy with the neck fat shows up so she can hit on him? Like, is this what models do? And by the way, if this is how it works, where's the basement? Because the next party I go to, I'm just going to sneak off to the basement of the party while the party rages on upstairs and be like, I'm here. Where are we? Come on, Katrina.
Well, I love, like, you know, the whole theme behind the movie is Vin's avenging his girlfriend's death.
Mm-hmm.
Within 10 minutes, he's at this party getting hit on by five hookers, and he's got this, hey, it's going to be back in L.A. look. It's like, wait, you're avenging your girlfriend's
cracking
death.
Cracking a Corona.
Yeah.
And I know this, the one piece of groundbreaking plot that's never been done in a movie before is the good guy has to infiltrate the bad guy's gang.
Yeah.
And that you've never seen in a movie.
It never happens.
It's never happened. This is the first time this has ever happened. So it's like that movie with Zac Efron that's just coming out.
Oh, the Body Switch movie?
17 again. It's never happened before. Yeah. No movie's ever been made about a father and a son where they switch roles.
We should write a movie about a father and son who switch bodies, but the son switches bodies but also has to infiltrate a gang as a good guy.
Yeah, and so there's always the test. And the test is, of course, the street race because these guys need the fastest. And by the way, when you're smuggling drugs, ammunition, I don't care if you're Al-Qaeda. I don't care if you work for the Mexican drug cartel. It's not about the fastest. It's usually about the quietest.
Get you.
You know what I mean? It's not like someone goes flying through the Mexican-United States border at 180 miles an hour.
True.
That tends to draw the attention of law enforcement. He gets in a beat-up van, and you have the stash under the floorboards, and he drives at 17 miles an hour. Isn't that how smuggling works?
Or it should have been like a challenge to see who could fit the biggest balloon of heroin up their ass.
I would definitely watch that.
The Ass and the Furious.
It's too late. Heroin's already in. I've already keistered the ball of heroin.
So Vin and Paul Walker go to Mexico in their cars, pretending to be mules, fast-driving mules, and stage a coup d'etat.
It gets a little dicey. It gets a little confusing because somehow the cartel is now I hope you're all sitting down. These guys are an evil drug cartel.
Oh, you're right.
And it turns out they just hire these drivers. Once the drivers get the stash across the border into Arizona or Texas or California, they then shoot them all?
Yeah.
Is that what happened, or am I a little confused about this?
I think that's what happened. They don't want any witnesses or something.
But they're not going to get Vin Diesel, because Vin Diesel opens up the Nas.
Yeah.
And this is what I'd been waiting for a long time.
Talk about the Nas.
The Nas is something that it's nitrous oxide. It's the same crap the dentist knocks you out with, but it burns like a wildfire.
And in the movies, this is when they click the switch and the car goes.
Right. And they always wait until the end of the race. I want to say hit it a little earlier. but he unscrews his NAS bottle and he starts letting his car fill up with this explosive gas, and then he hits the cigarette lighter.
Yep.
Now, let me just say this.
This is a passion of yours.
In an old car, if you ever hit a cigarette lighter in an old car, as soon as you pull your finger off, it pops out again.
Yeah.
You know what it's like? It's like the wash basin. It's like the faucet at the airport with the spring-loaded thing, or at the park where you hit the top.
Yeah.
You hit it, you put your hand under it, it pops up again. Because when it gets old, the action gets bad and it doesn't stay for 10 seconds.
So you didn't think this was realistic.
He hits the cigarette lighter, but even in a new car. When you hit the cigarette lighter, it's like one Mississippi, two Mississippi, pop, right? It's about 3 to 8 seconds.
I'd say 3 seconds max.
Okay. He hits the cigarette lighter, then he gets out of his car and he slowly, Vin Diesel doesn't do anything in a hurry. He slowly walks over to the guy he thinks he killed, and he does it like a long stare down.
Which they have to shoot from an upward camera because the guy's 5 inches taller.
Right, and the guy's got a gun. He's like, I got something for you, S.A. And he's like, yeah, well, I got something for you. Meanwhile, 20 minutes has gone by since he's hit this thing, but somehow Vin knows when that lighter's going to pop.
Well, he's timed it.
And then the guy like pulls the .44 out, and he's like putting it to Vin Diesel's head, and he's like, I'll see you in hell. And Vin's like, yeah, well, I got a surprise for you. How confident would you be if you were Vin Diesel?
In Vin's defense, he might have just repeatedly been pressing the cigarette lighter and timing it on the way to Mexico. There's one thing that bugs me more than the cigarette lighter is any movie where, and it's happened a few times, where you know, there's gas in the ground or whatever, and the bad guy flicks the match and throws it in midair, and somehow the match stays on fire until it hits the ground.
Slow motion.
You and I could go outside my house right now and try to do that, and I bet in 100 tries, every time it would go out.
Worse is the slow motion flick of the cigarette butt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's another thing, too, because, by the way, all this stuff is really disappointing. Like, you take gasoline, you throw it on the ground, you throw a cigarette butt on it, the cigarette goes out.
Yeah, the gasoline puts the cigarette butt out.
Yeah, it's no good. The slow motion. You flick anything in slow. If I took a cashew right now, and we were making a movie, and I flipped it in slow motion, it would explode when it hit the ground. Fireball. So I've learned not to flip things in slow motion from watching these movies.
So Vin and Paul Walker get control of the drugs.
Mm-hmm. And then, now they're going to cut a deal.
Yeah, I want to make a trade.
Yeah.
And I want head of the drug cartel.
I want him to be there.
I want him to be there personally to deliver it. That the drug cartel never figures out that they want the guy to be there because they're secretly working with the FBI.
Right.
That never enters anybody's mind. Why do they want him to be there?
And by the way, they have millions of tons of heroin. What do they need to bring the head honcho across the border?
Well, they always have to have that scene where the guy's like, you got something of mine. I want it back. It's like you've kidnapped his child. It's basically just this box of heroin.
Right. And so he comes back and risking a life and limb in a lifetime in prison. And the FBI's completely surrounded the joint. But somehow, and by the way, if I was in the FBI or the ATF or any of these or any police department,
you'd be furious.
There would be a class action lawsuit against every filmmaker who's ever made a film depicting me and my incompetence.
24 also does it.
The
entire
FBI has this small corner, small dock number 17 in the port of Los Angeles, surrounded. The main drug cartel guy in the world is standing in the middle. They always get away.
Yeah.
They always get away.
Always. And they do that thing where there's always the guy who resents whoever the star FBI guy is.
Right.
Like in the beginning, Paul Walker, he's chasing this bad guy, jumping across buildings and basically jeopardizing his life for 10 minutes, jumps through a window to get the guy.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, like one of the other guys is giving him crap.
Hot shot, hero.
Yeah.
Gotta play by your own rules. Do it your own way.
Yeah, jumping from buildings, yeah.
First off, it's the same scene Ice has with Maverick in Top Gun.
Yeah.
Every single
over and
movie
over again.
Has one of those scenes over and over again. And by the way, just like the part of the movie where the person says, we gotta stop before it's too late. It's already too late. And the guy never says, no, it's not. The other guy never defends himself. Like, because the opening scene is Paul Walker chasing some junkie over a roof, diving through a window, cartwheeling over a fence, jumping over a hood, getting the crap kicked
getting
out of
shot
him.
Shot at.
Getting shot at, cuffing the guy and bringing him in. And then when the a-hole guy in the FBI goes, you know, you're a hero, and we don't need them because they're dangerous, okay? So no more showing off, okay, Sparky? The guy never goes, hey, man, I got 3 stitches in my lip. I busted my ass. I got a herniated disc over here, and I brought the guy in myself, okay?
Right.
So don't give me any crap. Are you nuts? I busted my hump.
What have you done?
What have you done?
You're in a desk all day,
right,
jerk.
They never do that.
They also do the thing where they do this at 24 every season where – regardless of all the good things the guy has done and all the times he's risked his life and all the good he's done for crime in the country.
Yeah.
One slip up, you're off the case. You're under suspension.
Right. Have you guys not seen any episodes of your own show where this guy busts the guy at the end? You don't know that part's coming?
In 24, it's like season 7, Jack saved the world 1,000 times.
Right.
He's risked his life. He's disarmed nuclear bombs by himself. And somebody dies, they're like, Jack Bauer's our lead suspect. It's like, what? He saved this world 7 times.
This is essentially like you being a manager of a baseball team, having a guy who gets 2 strikes on him and then homers every single time he goes to the plate, except for this time he gets 2 strikes on him and you walk out and you go, lean into this one. Yeah, I don't want you. I want the bat on your shoulder. You either watch it.
Play by our rules.
Right, right. You've not seen all the other times the guy gets the 2 strikes and then hits the dinger?
Ugh.
You've not seen that? You don't know how this goes?
Well, for us, movies like this where we could just pick apart and they're so inane, but at the same time, enjoyable. You can make fun of them. We were talking during the theater. We didn't care about the other people.
Well, that's the beauty. When you see a Merchant Ivory film and you start talking in the middle of it, you get shushed.
Right.
This one, if you don't talk, someone kicks the back of your chair and go, why aren't you guys talking?
You're like, Should you guys be laughing?
I was just taking a draw off my Dr. Pepper. We'll get back on it. Oh, okay. Yeah, everyone just talks.
So it's one of these movies, one of those movies for you in your wheelhouse. But then on top of that, just cars. Your single favorite thing.
Yes, it's cars. It's Jordana Brewster who...
Can't act.
Well, some of those Acuras, the slammed Acuras, were actually doing a better job of acting than Jordana Brewster. Jordana Brewster, and then, of course, you got Vin Diesel and Paul Walker. And by the way, when your bad acting stands out, standing between Paul Walker and Vin Diesel reading a horrible script, that's
trouble. You've accomplished it. We were talking about it, like... Hey, Hollywood just doesn't make sense to me. But here's a movie that as soon as I heard about it, I was like, this is going to do gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to do great. But because like Paul Walker and Vin Diesel, whatever, they haven't been successful the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
It took Hollywood like a while to come around and be like, let's put them back together. Look, we like this movie. We like these idiot actors together. Just keep trotting them out.
And not only that, as I told you, because see, you don't realize there's another level beneath Fast and Furious, and you don't go there. You don't understand that in the basement of action movies, there's another basement below it. And you won't go through that trap door, Bill.
What is it?
It's called Red Line.
Oh, yeah, Eddie Griffin.
It's the knockoff movies of the bad knockoff movies. It's like somebody said, what if we made Fast and Furious with worse actors and a worse script? That's the level. See, the great news about Fast and Furious is it spawns all the knockoffs.
Yeah.
We'll get another Red Line because of Fast and Furious. And I highly suggest you watch those because it has everything you love about the Fast and the Furious minus any modicum of acting or script or anything at all.
Well, one of the reasons I want your CBS pilot to succeed is because that will enable us to finally write the Smokey and the Bandit remake that we've been dying to make. The simplest, dumbest movie ever that would work if they re-released it today.
Absolutely. And God bless him, Jerry Reed just passed away.
Oh, yeah.
A few months ago.
I was watching a little Bandit 3.
Yeah.
When Burt Reynolds said, nah. And they were like, Can we do? Can we build it around Jerry Reed? Well, let's give it a whirl.
And Jerry Reed, God bless him. He was a great guitar player, but he wrote one of the laziest theme slash love songs ever.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Eastbound and Down, that's a classic.
Yeah.
But there was the love scene song, too, where Sally Field and him were going to get it on by the river.
Yeah.
And he told Sally only took his hat off for one thing.
Yeah.
And he never said what, but I guess it was to adjust his rug. But yeah. That's what I got. Anyway.
Yeah.
Then the theme song to the Bandit began, the love song, not the Smoking the Band, but the love song.
Right.
And they must have went to Jerry Reed and they said, look, we love what you did with the, you know, Eastbound and Down, Loaded Up and Truck, but we also need a love song. And he's like, all right, I got one. They call him the Bandit. They call him the Bandit. They call him the Bandit.
It's he's like, got a Woody.
They literally just said, it was just like they call you the Bandit 15 times.
Yeah.
Here you go. Love song. There you go.
Can you imagine him turning that in and they're like, it's great, Jerry.
It's awesome.
It's just what we wanted.
You just say his name 15 times while he nails Sally Fields?
He's got no pants on.
They call him the Bandit.
All right, you have to go.
Right,
thank you for spending so much time with us. And we can check your podcast every day at CorollaRadio.com.
Yeah, you can go to iTunes or you can go to AdamCarolla.com and check out my podcast.
All right, good luck finding a CBS wife.
Thanks, kiddies.
Talk to you.
So I get to sign off. Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed, you cried, you turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's over. Thus concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin.
With Subway Everyday Value, many of your Subway favorites will continue to be $5 footlongs. And when you buy any footlong, you can get any Subway Dollar Footlong Sidekick for just a dollar each or less. Choose from any of the Dollar Footlong Sidekicks, like refreshing 21-ounce drinks, creamy yogurt, crisp apple slices, chips, and two cookies. See store for details.